Good morning, everyone. Good to see all of you here, and thank you so much, Tong Yin, for leading us in worship together with our singers and our musicians. Thank you, Jason, for leading us in prayer. And thank you, Edwin, for unveiling, sounds like a very official event, right? Our logo, right, for the carnival, and more news about it. And we really pray for your participation in every way, because who is it blessing? Us, God's work here in Bishan. An outline of the message you can find in the bulletin. You want to follow that on page 3. That may be helpful. Let me begin by asking, what does this have to do with that? And what does that have to do with this? I do not know about you, but sometimes in the busyness and hecticness of living life in Singapore and around the world, as we zip from one occasion to another occasion, one circumstance to another circumstance, one incident to the other, and so we might ask, what does this have to do with that? They seem totally decoupled and unlinked from each other. So for myself, I might zip from a situation where you celebrate somebody's birthday to visitation of someone in hospital, to speaking to students, to meeting people at Raffles Place, in the workplace, to counseling, to teaching, to training. And I've told you this many times. One of my great fears as I grow old is this, grow older, is I dare not close my eyes when I pray, just in case I forget where I am. And my nightmare is that I could be praying a wedding prayer at a funeral, and a funeral prayer at a wedding. Because as we zip from one thing to the other, we lose context. Does that happen to you? Surely it must. What does this have to do with that? It's very much at the heart of this story. Because so many things have happened, and we ask ourselves, how does this link? The story here continues in chapter 6, where we spend a lot of time, with King Xerxes' insomnia. And we are not told why the king couldn't sleep. The words literally mean, the sleep of the king fled him, right? So have you ever been sleepless in Singapore? Yeah, baby hasn't, right? Have you ever been sleepless in Singapore? And if you have been sleepless, or worse still, you suffer from insomnia, what do you try? So some of us might try the blindfolds. Some of us might try quiet music. Some of us might try warm milk. Some of us might try sleeping pills. Some of us might try the proverbial counting sheep. And if all else fails, the most tested thing to put yourself to sleep is reading. Reading a book. So all those years ago, the king tried to put himself to sleep by reading a book. He asked for a book of memorable deeds. I'm told that the Persian kings and empire was obsessed with keeping records, especially royal records of the royal court and the exploits and achievements of their kings of the empire. And so they kept two kinds of royal records, the book of memoranda, and the events of the day. But both of them have one thing in common. They contain, usually, the exploits of their kings, of their rulers. So in all likelihood, the king was looking at this most recent events rather than history past. And the reader that he has, how many of you have the benefit of having a reader? The reader that he has chances upon the assassination plot recorded for us in chapter 2 by Bigthana and Teresh, and exposed by Mordecai. And King Xerxes immediately asks, what honor and recognition has Mordecai received? Now, friends, this is something I got from the scholars. The Hebrew word honor appears 17 times in the Old Testament. And guess where it appears the most? Here. 17 times in the entire Old Testament, but 10 times in Esther. The word recognition, right, appears 12 times in the entire Old Testament, but appears 3 times in Esther, which tells you that honor and recognition were very big for the Persians, and especially for Persian kings. When Persian kings grant honor and recognition to their subjects, it's a two-way traffic. It is as much a recognition of a deserving individual receiving that honor and recognition as much as it is a display of the king's generosity. and the king's capability to put his generosity into practice. How many of you think you're generous? I like to think all 400 of us are generous. But many of us cannot put our generosity into practice. My son wants a car. My daughter wants a house. My this, and you could go on and say, but I can't give those things to them. But here's the king. Every honor and recognition he does is a display of his generosity and his capability to do so. Just at that time, when Xerxes is considering how to reward Mordecai, Haman enters the court. And did you notice this? You read it with some care. The king is blissfully unaware of Haman's murderous plot against Mordecai. As Haman is blissfully unaware of Xerxes' plans to honor Mordecai. And the height of irony is that both Xerxes and Haman, they got Mordecai on their minds, but nobody speaks about Mordecai. Did you notice that? You should go, ha ha, something like that, right? And so if we could have it in the diagram, this would be it. The first slide comes on. Well, we have a thought bubble, right, that you read in cartoons, a thought bubble. So on Xerxes' mind is, how does he honor Mordecai? And guess what? On Haman's mind is, how does he hang Mordecai? What do you call this? So if there was a speech bubble between them, notice if there's a speech bubble there, neither of them mentions Mordecai. What do you call this? We call this cross purposes. People, individuals, human beings living at cross purposes. And the question we must ask is, how can God straighten out our deeply entrenched human cross purposes? How can God untangle, untie, undo such cross purposes? Did you notice that Xerxes was deeply troubled and totally determined to honor Mordecai at all costs to save his own face, for one? And did you notice that Haman was deeply offended and was determined to hang Mordecai at all costs to satisfy himself? Deeply entrenched cross purposes. What can you do about it, friends? In real life, nothing. When people have made up their mind about something, they're deeply entrenched in this, you ain't gonna change it, friends. How can God straighten this out? As you read this account again and again, God straightens out our cross purposes with, the next slide, with coincidences. Did you notice that this whole incident and the record of it, especially in Esther 6 and 7, is full of coincidence. Full of coincidences. And coincidences is, you could say, it so happened. It so happened. So the next line, it so happened that the king has insomnia. It so happened that the king asked for a book. And of all the books that he could have as king, he pulled out a book on with a chapter on Mordecai. It so happened that the king is disturbed as he discovers this assassination plot and didn't reward the person who exposed it and save his life. It so happened that Haman walks in at this point. And it so happens that Haman misreads the king's question about honoring and he starts to think, he's thinking about me. And it so happens that Haman mishonors his enemy in the end. What do you call this? Equals to a series of divine appointments, which tells you that life on earth is never simply coincidences. Life on earth, from day to day living, from moment to moment living in our days, is never it so happened. So it teaches, it declares a very powerful lesson. And what is that powerful lesson is our sermon title for today. That the God who seems to be missing, he's not mentioned. Right, next slide. The missing God who misses nothing. He misses nothing in our day-to-day living. And did you notice he misses nothing from our sleeplessness? If you are sleepless, he knows. And even there, he's sovereign about that. To our forgetfulness, the king has so many matters on his hands. There could be multiple assassination plots. He didn't hear about this one, and he totally forgot about rewarding Mordecai, the hero of this thing. And then he feels badly about it. He's actually shameful about it. Do you believe that we actually have a missing God who misses nothing in the universe, in the world, and in your life and my life? So just last week, Monday and I had a moment of wakefulness. Doesn't always happen, but a moment of wakefulness simultaneously. And you said, must be the blanket too short lah. You pull, then, both woke up. Right? No, we both woke up and we thought to ourselves, is God waking us up? Is the Spirit stirring us? Who does He want us to pray for? And we started praying in our beds at that time, praying for as many people that came to mind at that time. And by the time we woke up that morning, someone that we prayed for had just passed on. Just as we thought. No day, no week passes in which we are not reminded that God is sovereign. He may seem to be missing, but as we are told here in this account, God, the missing God, misses nothing from our sleeplessness to our forgetfulness in life. Did you notice in this account, the missing God who misses nothing, He also, next slide, from our what angers us to what bruises our ego. And from last week, Haman was filled with rage. Friends, how many of you were irritated when you came to church this morning? Don't bluff, you were, right? With each other, why so late? Why we have to comb your hair so long? We missed the bus, we missed the MRT. How many of you were frustrated? How many of you arrived in church this morning filled with rage? That's quite different, friends. That means you are livid, you are venting, you're about to burst out. That was Haman when he noticed Mordecai at the king's gate and Mordecai didn't bow. And even there, God is sovereign. From what angers us to what bruises our ego. So friends, in the last week, what has angered you? In the last week, what has bruised your ego? Did you notice that this missing God misses nothing from our thought bubbles, the next slide, to our speech bubbles? It so happens that Xerxes' first words to Haman, the king's first word to Haman here, is, "What shall I do to the man I desire to honor?" Imagine if the king had opened with the same dialogue and conversation that he gave to Esther up to this point. Imagine the king had encountered Haman. Haman had walked in and he opened with the same word. "What is it, Haman? What is your request? It shall be given you, even to half my kingdom." And Haman says, "Mordecai's head." It just so happened that the king opens his mouth and the dialogue is different to what he opens to his queen. Do you believe that God is sovereign even over our thought bubbles and our speech bubbles? Did you notice that God is also sovereign under this, from our appointments in life to our choices of friends? Appointments. Did you notice that the life of a Jew, God's person, hangs between two Gentiles, a Gentile king and a Gentile prime minister, the two most powerful people in the kingdom? Have you had your life hang somewhere in somebody's hand? And I don't mean just simply in the hands of your employer or if you're son or daughter, in the hands of your parents, but your life hangs in the hands of your enemies. Talk about a divine appointment. My life as a Jew hangs in the hands of two Gentiles. And did you notice Zeresh and her wise friends were the first to see perhaps Haman's failure is because he's dealing with the Jews? Is it because they've heard of some reputation of the Jews? Or in all likelihood, a reputation of the Jews' God and faith is in God? If this is true, this is perhaps the closest acknowledgement of God and His sovereignty, and not upon the lips of God's people, but upon the lips of Gentiles. And when you look at this, the missing God who misses nothing, it can be totally frightening. He knows my thought bubbles. He knows my speech bubbles. He knows my appointments. He knows the friends I choose. Friends, that can be totally frightening if you don't believe in God. but it can be totally liberating and assuring if you believe in God and trust Him and love Him and worship Him. If we believe that God does not miss anything, from our sleeping to our waking moments and everything in between, what does that mean for us in day-to-day living? Some of us are thought bubble amnesiacs. And what do I mean by thought bubble amnesiacs? When we are deep in thought, either dreaming or wishing of a better life, or planning responsibly, or scheming evilly, devilishly, we are most prone to forget that at that moment of deep thought in our thought bubble, either dreaming wishfully, or planning responsibly, or scheming evil, we are most prone to forget that God is sovereign over that. The thought bubble that nobody can hear or see, He knows. It's happening in Chris's mind. It's happening in John's mind. It's happening in Weiming's mind. You consider that? Is that frightening? Is that liberating? Some of us are speech bubble or conversation amnesiacs. When we are in full flight of talking, when we are full flight in a conversation, when we are full flight in giving our opinions or making a point, or in our conversation accusing others and defending ourselves, any idea of God flies out of the window. In other words, it's not just our thought bubble has no God, our speech bubble has no God. Once we are in full flight of a conversation, in the heat of the moment, we forget God, that God has anything to do with this conversation. Some of us are friendship amnesiacs when it comes to making friends, keeping friends, and listening to friends, as Haman did by listening to the wrong people. I said, how can it be wrong? His wife and his wise friends. Some of us, when it comes to seeking friends, making friends, keeping friends, listening to friends, we forget God altogether, because we find our security in our friends and our friendship. Let me ask you, which one of these amnesias are you prone to? The thought bubble, the speech bubble, the appointment bubble, or the friendship bubble? Friends, all of which leads us to that we are pride amnesiacs. For that is the very essence of Haman. As the poster boy of the Persian Empire, that has chosen to find its own way and glory without God. We want so much to be in control, we get so used to living God out of our thought bubble, our speech bubble, our time bubble, our appointment bubbles, our friendship bubbles, our pride bubble. The frightening thing is, it doesn't bother us. I didn't think about God the whole week, didn't bother me. I didn't speak about Him the whole week, didn't bother me. Not me, I'm just on your behalf. So I ask of all of us, have you unthinkably become, the next slide, a Christian atheist? Is there such a being? Is there such a person? That by name I'm Christian, but in essence, from moment to moment and day to day living, there is no semblance of God anywhere. From my thinking to my speaking to my relating, then we dare not and cannot call ourselves children of God. So presumably, if anything Esther sends to us, it must be this. They were called, perhaps by some commentators, were they Jewish secularists, Jews who become secular, or were they in fact Jewish atheists? Because as they go through this whole exile experience, as they go through this life and death genocide against them, there is no mention of God in their lives. We mustn't think that we won't arrive here, friends. We could be churchgoers, but atheists from Monday to Saturday, and everything in between. So I ask, does the sovereignty of God frighten you or assure you? Liberate you? Depends. It should frighten us if we don't know God, if we don't trust God, if we don't love God. But it should totally assure us and liberate us if we do. And notice as you read these accounts, God straightens our cross purposes. Next slide. How? He straightens our cross purposes through pride. Notice about Haman. He has in fact been honored in chapter 3. So much so he's been promoted to the highest, most powerful. But now in this account, he's shown to be a glutton for honor. In that way, friends, we got to learn the lesson of pride. Pride does something to us. You know, you want to turn to your neighbor and say, pride does, ask them, what do you think pride does to us? Is your neighbor there? Pride blinds us. Pride blinds us. It blindsides us. And for Haman, how did it blind him? He could not see the difference. He couldn't see many differences. He could not see the difference between someone who rightly deserves honor, Mordecai, to someone who desires and hungers honor wrongly. His pride had blinded him to that. Someone deserving of honor, give it. It's deserving. He exposed this assassination plot. It is due to him. But for him, he had already risen and gotten everything a prime minister should get. So King Xerxes' veiled question about who to honor feeds Haman's insatiable appetite for honor. For Haman, honor meant royalty. And did you know what did he want? He wanted two royal things. He wanted royal robes. He wanted a royal horse. And he wanted everything you could give to a royalty. In other words, he wanted to be king. Short of telling the king, I want to be you. Everything he wanted to be that. He was actually essentially more powerful than the king already. And so, in reality, Haman is asking to be treated as no less than king. You asking to be treated as no less than king in your marriage? You asking to be treated as no less than king in your family? In your work? In your business? In your relationships? And if there's one lesson, if we could play on the words, it could be this. If we are hung up about pride, finally, the next slide, we will be hung by pride. And many of us live our life empowered by glory, empowered by self-honor. And one day, the scriptures tell us, we will be hung by this. Because made in the image of God, we are not empowered by pride. We are empowered by love, and love serves the other person. Love thinks of the other person first. Love thinks of the welfare and the worth of the other person above and beyond ours. The main focus of Esther 6 could be this. The main focus of Esther 6 is not the honor of Mordecai, which is simply one or two lines. The main message of Esther 6 is actually the humiliation of Haman, the Gentile. Next slide. Oh, I missed that, I think. The main focus is that. So the humiliation of Haman, the Gentile, he was hung up about pride, and finally he was hung by pride. What else can we learn from the Queen's Banquet? As you read from this point and a summarized in chapter 7, we read this. Chapter 7, so the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And as they were drinking wine on the second day, the king asked again, Queen Esther, what is your petition? I actually don't know what tone he would have asked this. So I'm just second guessing because he's asked quite a few times, you know. Have you ever asked a few times? And your tone might change. Huh? So could it be, Queen Esther, what is your petition? Can't be. Queen Esther, what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? Even to half the kingdom, it will be granted. Then Queen Esther answered, if I have found favor with you, O king, and it pleases your majesty, grant me my life. This is my petition, and spare my people. This is my request. So what do we learn from this? By the time we come now to Esther, we learn that God works against all odds. That he untangles our cross purposes against all odds. God not just works through our coincidences. God not just works through our pride, but he can work through. How can a woman school in the school of spas, beauty treatment, survive and succeed in the ugly world of men and politics? You ever ask yourself that? How can a woman school in aesthetics, in beauty, ever survive and succeed over men and their cunning in the world of politics, of stabbing each other in the back. And some of you may say, maybe it was like that in the harem. The Esther lesson could also be this. Did you notice that time was not on her side? There's a deadline set for her people. People were not on her side. Haman wasn't, the most powerful man not on your side. And circumstances was not on her side. She did not realize that Haman's plan was running ahead of her plan. And she was still dilly-dallying. And as the man read this, say, hurry up, Esther. Did you notice the Esther lesson could be that time, people, and circumstance, next slide, may not be on our side. But as long as God is on our side, it will be all right. And against all odds, in a time like this, time and people and circumstance, nothing was on Esther's side. Apart from a small opening of the king, and this, even with this, she was taking a great risk in delaying the king. Whatever we do not know about powerful people, when powerful people want something, they usually want something done yesterday, not today. So somebody was just telling me their boss is very demanding, they're very high up in the public service, and their boss says, I wanted the report yesterday, not today. Imagine you are now in service of the king, in the presence of a king. You do not delay a king's request. You do not postpone a king's passion. She's like, I told last week in ELPC at Adam, she's like a football player who has a whole goalie in front of her with no goalkeeper, but she never strikes. We call that, is she frozen or is she cool? Which one? Frozen means paralyzed from fear to inaction. Cool means steady. So is Esther frozen or is Esther cool? The king was already open at the first banquet. He greedy la. He was really open. Tell me what you want. I'll give it. I'll grant it. And then she has to postpone another one. You could not get a woman under more pressure than Esther. Her own life and the life of the entire nation was actually in her head, in her heart, and in her hands. And she has to hatch this plan all by herself because there was no way that she and Mordecai would have kept in touch. And there was no way they could have hatched this. And what was her great plan? I do not know what to call it. Maybe Esther's great plan was feast and frustrate the king. Right? She was going to feast all the way into the king's heart and then frustrate him with delay after delay. Then after he cannot tahan anymore, say, please tell me. Is that possible? Or was her strategy banquet and then beg? So that she'll banquet, she's such a good host, she throws great parties, banquets, and then if the king is so happy with the banqueting and the partying, maybe he'll be willing to listen to her pain. Whichever one it was, feast and then frustrate him, banquet and then beg. We need to ask, is this a lesson of human wit? Or is this a lesson of godly wisdom? Did you notice? As she speaks about this, she never once mentions the king's name and the king's part in this whole death edict that he signed against her people. She kept hinting about Haman before she finally exposes the name. But the king is not mentioned. What do you call that? Wit, survival wit, or godly wisdom? Whichever one it was, is this. Next slide. She seems to be a picture of the right words and the right actions at the right time, giving the right outcome. And that won't be a bad formula, a bad representation of what wisdom means in the Old Testament. But is this wisdom or is this pure human survival means? And friends, by the end of this, whatever we do not know, whatever was the strategy to feast and to frustrate the king, was it to banquet and beg him, was it human wit or godly wisdom? The king hangs Haman. He gets angry. He walks out to the garden. He comes back. See Haman's there. See sees Haman there. And then approaching Esther, reaches a conclusion is, what's he doing to my wife? What's he doing to the king, to the queen? Bang! To the gallows. 75 feet high. As that was read, I was just asked, how do you think, how high this is? You think it's 75? 75 is 15 meters. Architects tell me. About that. This is very high. It's very high. Imagine somebody hanging there, from there. Imagine. That's very high, friends. And so it ends. It begins in chapter 6 with a king's insomnia. It ends in chapter 7 with a king's satisfaction. And in between is the solution to the problem, the hanging of Haman. So our God's ways, right throughout this, not just this book, indeed, right throughout the Bible. This is our God. This is His story of salvation. This is the gospel. God working through coincidences. There is nothing too small and nothing too big for God to work in. God working through our pride and bringing the undoing and the entanglement of our cross purposes. God working against all odds, where time and people and circumstance may be against us. And God using either human wit or godly wisdom, right words, right actions at the right time, the right outcome that God brings for His people. The missing God, who is nowhere, is actually everywhere. So this is a message about God's sovereignty. What does this have to do with that? We must change that, friends. What does this have to do with God? And what does that have to do with God? God must always be our starting point, our ending point, and our reference point in between our waking moments and our sleeping moments and everything in between. God's sovereignty must not be mistaken to mean, if God is sovereign, then nothing matters lah. I do right, I do wrong. That's the wrong message. If God is sovereign, then everything matters. My thought bubble matters. My speech bubble matters. My relating bubble matters to Him. Everything matters. So God's sovereignty does not encourage us to carelessness, but God's sovereignty encourages us to carefreeness. Carelessness is different to carefreeness because I know there is a God and He's moving all things to a glorious ending for His name and for His people. No matter what evil men and women plot against me, I try my best, I pray my heart out, I make the best decisions I can, I put the best actions into place, and if it turns out still bad, I trust in God. The sovereignty of God is not that nothing matters, but everything matters. So how has the week been for you? A lady rang up Mona and said she almost committed suicide. She's not from our church, just in case you go thinking. And what stopped her, Mona asked? What stopped her was listening to our messages on our podcast on the internet. And he said, can you tell Chris, your husband, and can you tell all the pastors and preachers of RPC to keep preaching and teaching God's word as you do? Because it saved me. What does this have to do with that? A woman on the verge of taking her life in the four walls of a house, desperate because of a family situation, which I don't really know about. Never underestimate that. God's sovereignty does not encourage us to carelessness, but to carefreeness, to responsibility, to live our lives in fear of God and love of this God. And ultimately, the person who perfected this was the Lord Jesus Christ. We have just done John's gospel, where everything He did, right word, right action, right time, for the right outcome. He kept saying, it's not my hour yet. It's not my hour yet. It's not my time yet. But when the time came, He approached the cross. And so if this is true of God and God's Savior to us, then it must be true of us, Christians and the church. And so how do we do this? The ending slide. How do we do this? How can God straighten our cross purposes? It is to believe in Jesus
and to behave like Jesus and to become like Jesus, that there is no circumstance in our life that is too small, too minute, that there is no pain that is too deep, that there's no problem that is too big, that God cannot enter through Christ and His Spirit and bring a glorious outcome for His people, for His glory. Do you believe this? I absolutely believe this. And I pray for us as ARPC, as we walk out from here, that the sovereignty of God over our lives will be absolutely liberating, causing us to live in fear, in love, and in worship of Him. Let's rise to sing the closing song as we pray together.